New numbers out today show that U.S. manufacturing expanded in June at the fastest clip in more than a year. A bit of good news for an industry that historically in this country has been a male-dominated one. But the share of American men between the ages of 25 and 54 who are neither working nor looking for work has doubled since the 1970s. In fact, roughly one in six of those men are either unemployed or out of the workforce altogether. For a closer look at what's going on, we're joined by Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. He joins us each week. Hi, Derek.
Hi, Jeremy.
So we know there's been a decline in manufacturing in this country, which used to employ a lot of these working age men, but that's not the whole story here, is it?
No, it's not. The disappearance of prime age men, as you said, is one of the most intriguing economic mysteries in the country right now. You have millions of men who should be working in the economy, or at least looking for work, but they aren't. And economists aren't really sure why. There are two big explanations that I think go the farthest in terms of answering this question. The first is, as you said, deindustrialization, the disappearance of manufacturing, which has been an enormous story since the 1970s. The second really important story, I think, is prison. The U.S. has the highest incarceration rate in the developed world. And you have millions of men who have left prison and find it really difficult to be re-employed in the economy. And so I think when you combine these factors, the disappearance of manufacturing jobs on the one hand, and the difficulty of post-incarceration employment on the other hand, that probably goes the furthest towards explaining where did all these men go.
And some would say that another explanation would be that more of these men are on disability, that they're collecting those benefits.
That's right. There is this program, Social Security Disability Insurance, which a lot of conservatives think is a major driving force in men leaving the workforce. It should be said that when you look at the demographics of these men, they are disproportionately black, disproportionately less educated, and they're concentrated in the South. The number of these men who have signed up for disability payments in the last few decades has tripled. It's not likely, a lot of economists say, that the actual disability rate itself has tripled. What you have essentially are a lot of men that I've described who are so frustrated with the economy that they're trying to get a paycheck from the government, which happens to keep them from working full time. So it is an explanation. It is absolutely something that conservatives talk about. But I don't think that it is the driving force here.
So is there an economic impact on the rest of us, those of us who are working, from these people who are not working, have left the labor force, or is it just a terrible story for them?
It's not just a story for them. It really is a national story. We're all in this together. The unemployment rate has gone down by quite a lot in the last few years. It's now around 5%, and that's low. But at the same time, people look at wages and the lack of wage growth and the fact that the economy isn't growing, and they think, well, how on the one hand could we have an economy with a really low unemployment rate, but it also seems to be not sort of pumping it at its full capacity? One of the answers is that we have all of this labor slack. We have all of these men who should be working, but they're not. So this issue of these millions of missing prime age men is very much a national economic issue.
And this is where we get to what I think is the really interesting thing about what you have described in The Atlantic, and we'll link people to that at hereandnow.org about this, which is that there is a solution for the government to step in here and help get some of these men back to work.
Yeah, this was something that I thought long and hard about. There were sort of two stories that were circling around in my head. On the one hand, the story of the millions of missing men that we've been talking about. On the other hand, that we need millions of new construction workers to build homes in dense metro areas on the coast, to build homes in the suburbs for all these millennials to move into. And it occurred to me that what if we could find some way, some sort of government voucher program to pay these men so that they could work as construction workers and build the homes that we need? It seems to me that that would be the sort of solution that would sort of solve two problems at once. On the one hand, putting these men back to work, growing the economy. On the other hand, solving some of the major housing shortages that we have across the country.
And I can't help but think, as I hear you describe this problem and the potential solution, that this feeds into a lot of the political unrest that we see, not just in this country, but also overseas, and especially with the news about Brexit, that a lot of these people are the ones who are so angry about the influx of immigrant labor who are coming in and taking jobs when they can't find one themselves.
That's right. You look at the maps of the Brexit vote and you look at the difference between London, which voted overwhelmingly to remain, versus some of the counties to the north that voted overwhelmingly to leave. And then you look at the same geographical inequalities that we have in the U.S. You have this Rust Belt and the Southeast. And then you compare that to the metro areas, which are relatively booming. And you think, is there some way that we can get some of these men who are fallow and move them closer to areas where productivity is high? It's a really, really difficult challenge, but I think it's one that we need to pay more attention to.
That's Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic, who joins us each week on Here and Now. Derek, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, starting today in Vermont, nearly all food labels must reveal whether they include genetically engineered ingredients. The so-called GMO labeling law is the first of its kind in the country. There is a move in Washington to enact national standards, even as federal authorities argue genetically engineered products already meet the same safety requirements as food that is